You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Colbing. I'm here as always with David Rimmel. We're opening up the mailbag for part two this week. Second part of our two-parter. You can listen to part one that we put up yesterday. Let's get into the questions. This one from Justin Evans. Hey guys, do you think it's possible that in time, Bam Adebayo and Hassan Whiteside could be played on the floor at the same time with a Twin Towers kind of game? Despite the league moving towards small ball more and more every year, I think it would be another great accomplishment for Spo if he could make the big man dominant again, especially in this era. A question from Justin Evans.
I gotta say, what is it with everybody's obsession about wanting to make the big man dominant again?
I think it reminds people of when they were, and I don't know how old Justin is, but it reminds people of maybe when they were just in their formative years, getting introduced to basketball and falling in love with basketball. Maybe it's that, and maybe it's, look, maybe the only option to beat small ball is big ball. And there's this belief out there that somebody's going to come along and play two big centers and just kind of attack small ball that way. And if you have two good enough centers, it should be able to work. I don't know.
Because you're looking at, I guess, the most success that any team has had as far as against Golden State. You could argue, aside from Cleveland, you know, in the finals, you could argue it was probably Oklahoma City a couple seasons ago. Yep. In the playoffs, where they had a 3-1 lead, obviously. And I think Billy Donovan ran lineups with Serge Ibaka, Steven Adams, and occasionally factoring in Enes Kanter in there as well. So they were doing their best to, quote-unquote, beat up the Warriors as much as possible. And you could say, oh, he counteracted the small ball of Golden State very effectively with his big man lineup. But yeah, he also had Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant.
Right.
And I think that factors a lot into that ability to kind of get that 3-1 lead in Oklahoma City. And you looked at what happened in the last three games of that series where Golden State wound up winning it anyway. And it's probably because Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook were mostly just playing against each other, you know, fighting for that one big shot at the end, one that would occasionally not fall. And all of a sudden, Golden State winds up, you know, eking out a victory in that series and going on to lose to the Cavaliers in the finals. But whatever. So I don't know that a big man dominance is necessary in order to factor against Golden State. I mean, I don't know what works against Golden State. I don't think
nobody
29
does.
Other teams. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. No, nobody does. The 29 other teams are scratching their head going, I have no idea. I mean, they got Kevin Durant. They're even better than ever. And nobody knew 2 years ago. Nobody knows now. And nobody knows this season coming up. So
you can make an argument that Kevin Durant is the best center in the league, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Ringer, actually, Kevin O'Connor, may have said something about those lines. Or there was a piece shortly after the finals where that was certainly alluded to. I mean, he's 7 feet tall. What are you going to do? I mean, he stretches the floor. He's put on enough bulk. Look, I understand people say the center position should be big, burly people that weigh over 300 pounds or at least 270 pounds of solid muscle and pulling down rebounds and stuff like that. But those guys were limited. I mean, you look at the players of the past, as much as everybody reveres Bill Russell, et cetera, I think friend of the program, Rode Ned Carney, wrote something on Twitter yesterday that UD would probably eat up Bill Russell alive. And he's probably right. I mean, for all the competitiveness that we love attaching to Russell and everything else, he was limited. You know, he was limited in an era where the players around him were limited. He was just better than everybody else other than Will Chamberlain. And I think going up against today's players, I think it's ridiculous. Comparing eras just doesn't work on any level.
The big man is still going to be dominant. It's just going to look differently. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, their big man is going to be closer to Kevin Durant than they are Alonzo Mourning. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be every team wants their Durant. Every team wants their Jokic, their Draymond Green.
Yeah,
Kristaps
Porzingis is a great one. Yeah, absolutely.
Karl-Anthony Towns. Big guys who are 6'10", 7 feet tall, who can shoot threes, defend the perimeter. If you have one of those guys, then you're in position to own the future of the NBA. If you have one of these guys, if you're Minnesota or whatever team New York ends up trading Kristaps Porzingis to, you're going to be in position to own the league because you have what Golden State has in Draymond Green, but an actual center-sized player, right? Draymond Green is 6'6 on a good day. You can have a guy with Draymond Green's skill set at 7 feet tall. That's an incredible advantage, and that's your center. Your center is just going to look and do different things. He's not going to just rebound and try to block shots. He's going to rebound. He's going to block shots. He's going to get steals. He's going to get a rebound and dribble the ball down to the other end of the court and push the break. He's going to shoot threes. He's going to do all these things. And if you can get a player like that, that player will dominate the game for you. So it's your big men are still going to be dominant. And hopefully, maybe that's what Miami sees in Bam Adebayo. We've seen workouts where he's shooting three-pointers and his stroke looks fluid for a center. We've heard that his footwork is impeccable and he projects as a guy who can defend multiple positions on the perimeter and switch and do all these things that, frankly, Whiteside can't do. So does that mean? So maybe he is a percentage of what Karl Anthony Towns is. And if he is, that's a huge win for Miami. Now, can you play him alongside Whiteside? It doesn't look like you would play those kind of guys. Like, as fluid as Bam sounds like he is, he's still a center. It's driving me crazy that people keep listing him as a power forward because he's not. But
I mean, isn't he, though? I mean, couldn't he be a power forward?
That's the thing. I don't want to close the door on it. Yeah, I think he'd be best used. Like, even if he could play power forward, people with that position, he'd still be better as a five.
He has a versatility to play the four, but why wouldn't you want to put that in a more mobile big man at center? I mean, look, that's the whole thing. It's like positions are less and less important, and so that's why I'm more curious about Justin's questions. I mean, we're talking about Spoelstra and what a great accomplishment it would be for him to make the big man dominant. You could argue he's the one that made him less relevant, you know, made less dominant by inserting Chris Bosh at the center position and going, holy cow, I've got a guy who's 6'11", 6'10", maybe, who weighs 230 pounds, who shoots 35% of his threes. I want him out there over Eric goddamn Dampier.
You know? I mean, and look, there could be situations where you play both of them. And that's just more versatility that Spoelstra has. Maybe there's 5 minutes in a game where you're just like, look, we're getting destroyed on the glass. We need to dominate this game. We need to put our footprint on this physically. Let's play Bam and Hassan together. And if that's possible, by all means, do it. If the situation calls for it, by all means, go ahead and do it. But in general, I think that there is a world where Bam just keeps improving. Hassan approaches the tail end of his prime. Maybe becomes expendable. Maybe the Heat don't resign him. And then Bam Adebayo becomes that player. I just at this point, if you're with the 14th pick in the draft, Miami had Bam the highest on their draft board, and they were excited to get him. You just get him. Period. End of story. And you figure it out later, so to speak. But I think that it's possible for a few minutes to play them both together. And if Adebayo ends up being able to shoot threes at a respectable rate, whatever that might be, 30%, right. I don't know. There are situations that could call for it, but as a starting power forward, I don't think so. I think he's going to come off the bench. He's going to develop behind Whiteside, and you're going to see somebody like James Johnson or somebody else, more of a perimeter-oriented player, start at the four.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how that would work. I mean, if you put them both out there, obviously their defense still works where you're fuddling everybody towards Whiteside where you can swat them away from the rim.
Right.
Can you put Adebayo in there to guard your quicker fours? Do you want to match him up against LeBron James? Do you want to match him up against Kevin Love? I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, what's a good matchup at the four?
No idea.
That Adebayo could exploit.
Yeah. I mean, you could play him against, like, a Ryan Anderson type, who's not really going to put the ball on the floor. He's just going to sit there in the corner and shoot threes. I mean, we've seen so many players like that. Maybe you could, if it's not a major threat, maybe you could do it that way. But we're not going to know until we see Bam in person. Right. All right, next question. Who's this from? Okay. This one from Sam Heaton. That's not his real name. There's no way. He's got Heaton in his last name?
He's written to us before.
I think it's a stage name. Phil Jackson is incompetent and has lost his mind. Good start.
Well, there you go.
Look at how he's completely damaged Carmelo's trade value. And there's even talk about buying him out. He is crazy enough to actually trade Kristaps right now. I think, as per his statements, the Heat could land the real future of the NBA style. And a building block that doubles as the best magnet for free agents, too. They could and should do whatever it takes to get him. A Whiteside trade package gets a way better, younger, higher upside cornerstone on a rookie scale contract at center that we can match in restricted free agency after. basically saying that we get Kristaps' awesome contract.
Right.
We would have cap room to sign a max guy, James Johnson, and someone else again. Imagine Porzingis, James Johnson, Gordon Hayward, Goran Dragic. Let's do this before Phil Jackson is committed to an institute. P.S. I know that the salaries don't match straight up, obviously, but that's what I'm turning to you guys for. Can it happen with some kind of package of multiple players, draft picks, or a third team? Sam Heaton, whose real last name isn't Heaton.
This is pseudonym Sam Heaton.
It's a state.
He writes into Golden State's Locked On Warriors and he writes Sam Warriorson? No, that doesn't work for him.
All right, so there's two things here. Phil Jackson is crazy, and if he is crazy, is he actually going to trade Kristaps? Here's the problem. I don't care how crazy Phil Jackson is.
Yes.
There is zero chance that he trades his star player to the Miami Heat because he would be murdered, right? He would be murdered.
There's so much going on with that, too. I mean, we'll never forget our interaction, our limited interaction with Phil Jackson and Kristaps in Summer League last year. A very colorful anecdote exchanged in the hallways of Orlando's Summer League.
Off air on an anecdote, yes.
Trading with Pat Riley and giving Kristaps to Miami. I mean, he probably would not make it to LA. I mean, to the airport. No. I can't imagine him. Yeah, he'd
die
in the way.
Adam Silver would veto the trade for his safety. It would just be, it's impossible. That said, if I want to, I appreciate the question, but I do want to take this question in another direction.
Okay.
Because it is impossible. There's just no way. Is there a package of Whiteside, Justice Winslow, the 2021 draft pick that we could trade? Whatever, just trade away everything we have, literally. For Kristaps, and could Miami put the best package together? Absolutely. Could you take Whiteside, Dragic, and Winslow and trade those guys for and Bam Adebayo, I guess. Throw all those guys together, trade them for Kristaps Porzingis, and take Joakim Noah's contract off of New York's hands? Absolutely they could do that. But there is zero chance that a trade between the Knicks and the Heat involving Kristaps Porzingis ever happens because Phil Jackson will be murdered if it does. That said, the direction I want to take this in is, and this is what maybe I'm hoping that the Heat front office is thinking in drafting Bam Adebayo, is let's get a guy who crosses off some of these boxes that Kristaps does.
Wow.
A guy fleet of foot, a guy who could shoot threes, who could protect the rim. Like, obviously Bam isn't going to be Kristaps. Kristaps is a generational talent. He is 7'8". Like, he is huge, and he plays like a guard. Whatever
is that
team
with
ends
shoes
up getting,
or without shoes?
I don't even know. Without shoes, probably. He's generational. Whatever team ends up with Kristaps Porzingis in the next few years is very lucky to have him. It's just not going to be Miami. If you could start checking off those boxes with guys that you're drafting, right? Guys who are just versatile like that, then that's the right direction for the Heat.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty perfect. I mean, look, the animosity between Riley and Phil Jackson notwithstanding, I mean, there just doesn't seem like a very likely chance. I kind of want to disagree. I don't think that there's a package that Miami could possibly offer that would entice them, unless they're willing, as you mentioned, to take back Joakim Noah's terrible contract. And I can't see a world where Riley's willing to do that just to accept Porzingis. Could you waive Noah and stretch him out?
If you're trading a bunch of max deals, I could see a world where if you're trading out of the Tyler Johnson contract, for example, maybe you could take Joakim's Noah contract on just to have Porzingis. Like, that's just like, that's the taxes you pay on Porzingis and his limit and his nothing contract, right? Like, Kristaps Porzingis is making no money, basically. So you're paying less than $20 million for Joakim Noah and Kristaps Porzingis? Yeah, I'll do that. But,
so if you trade Whiteside, let's say you trade Whiteside and give a little cap relief, maybe Tyler as well. Trade Whiteside, Tyler Johnson, and let's say Justice for Kristaps and Joakim Noah, and you somehow stretch Noah's contract if you can.
Yeah.
I mean, then you clear up a lot of cap space. Obviously, you can re-sign Kristaps at a huge amount.
I mean, it works. It's just like it will never happen.
Would Mickey Arison be willing to eat whatever's left of Noah's contract?
For Kristaps Porzingis? I think so.
I think so, too. I think you can market the hell out of that.
I just, you know, if you're New York, it doesn't make sense to trade for Whiteside or Dragic or Tyler Johnson. It doesn't make sense. You need young, like, if the asking price is 3 first round picks that project as top 5 picks, that makes sense. At least, like, you're starting to get to a point where if you have to trade Kristaps for whatever reason, you need a bounty, and you don't just need an immobile center and a few just throw in players. Like, that just, it doesn't make sense. So
you don't think New York fans might give him a pass, or this Phil Jackson, they might not give him a pass if he unloads Noah's contract?
No.
No,
you're still trading Kristaps.
They prioritize Kristaps that much?
Yeah, they love Kristaps, man. Like, it's just...
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's like trading Patrick Ewing just to get out of a bad deal.
You don't earn a nickname Porzingis without... Right. Without being much beloved by that fan base.
Our last question comes from Brian Young. I understand that it's a big summer for the Heat, but it doesn't make sense to lock up long-term money when guys like Russell Westbrook, John Wall, Jokic, LaMarcus Aldridge, Klay Thompson, Rubio, Kemba Walker are all unrestricted free agents in 2019. I think specifically Jokic could be had by a team like the Heat, but they obviously couldn't make a run at a player like that if they had money tied up in JJ, Deion, Tyler Johnson. Maybe Blake Griffin or Gordon Hayward is worth it, but I'm not sure on that. And this is a question that I posed to Barry Jackson when I had him on last week. This isn't the only free agency, but and there will be players available in the next couple of years. If you're Miami, and I don't even look at it as Blake Griffin or Gordon Hayward, I look at it as guys like James Johnson and Deion Waiters. Do you sign those guys in for long-term deals worth $40, $50, $60 million in total, when you have guys like this coming down the pike that could be available? And his answer to me was simply, yeah, you still do it, just because this is a team that you need to make a playoff run, and there's no guarantee that those guys are going to come. Plus, and here's the kicker, this is the only offseason that Miami has cap room. With the way the roster is constructed right now, because Tyler Johnson's contract balloons in the next 2 years, they're not going to have cap space, period. Whether or not they re-sign, no matter what they do this offseason, they're not going to have cap space. They can let James Johnson and Deion Waiters walk. They're not going to have cap space for the next 2 years, because Dragic's deal keeps going up. Whiteside's deal keeps going up. You know, you've got to re-sign Winslow and Josh Richardson, who are up for extensions here pretty soon. If you want to keep this roster together in this way, that he will not have cap space to go after those guys in the first place. So, and maybe you disagree with me here, David, but if you re-sign James Johnson and Deion Waiters, at the very least, you do what you did last year when you locked up Tyler Johnson again, and you just kept their value in-house. At the very least, at some point, you could trade these guys away for something else. Miami doesn't have any draft picks. If the Heat aren't performing to their expectations by the trade deadline, you could trade James Johnson, and they re-sign James Johnson and Deion Waiters, and they're not performing to those expectations. You could trade one of these guys for future first-round picks or second-round picks or something. Just get assets in return instead of just letting them walk away for nothing and all that work going kaput. That's, to me, the value there. Like, they're not going to have that financial flexibility that we know Pat Riley covets a lot, but they're not going to have that anyway. So you might as well have some sort of roster flexibility where you could start packaging these guys together and trading them for assets that the Heat just don't have right now.
Do you think it's shades of 2010 kind of coloring how people perceive free agency in the future? Like, the fact that worked out so well lends people to believe that this is a viable option, where you can just say, you know what, I'm going to hold off on signing anybody over the next couple of years, knowing that I'll be able to acquire X huge, you know, superstar whale in a season or two. I just don't know. It's like, why would you pass up on getting skilled players like Waiters and Johnson on the hope that you might be able to get Jokic or John Wall? There's no guarantee.
And you can't just tank, you know, until 2019, because if you do, then you're just a tanking team. Why would John Wall want to join that? Why would Westbrook want to join that? Like, as we saw with LeBron and Durant, these guys want to join winning teams that still have the cap room. So if you're Miami, you've got to try to field a winning team and then hope that when those guys become available, you could find a way to clear the cap space to go get them. And that maybe that does take a Michael Beasley-like trade, where you trade the former second pick in the draft for nothing. you know, right. just to clear enough cap space to sign Bosch, LeBron, and Wade, because at that point, the ends justify the means. Maybe when those guys come available, you trade the last 2 years of James Johnson and Deion Waiters for nothing because Westbrook's like, yeah, I want to go to Miami.
Plus, you had Dwayne Wade in 2010, right. which made signing anybody much more alluring. There is no player like that currently on the roster. And maybe that's what Brian is hinting at, is that you have to do whatever you can to get one of those players first and then start building afterwards. But realistically, why would they sign here? The ring, the championship is stressed more than at any point in NBA history, I think. Before that, it was a nice bonus that players could cash in when they were still, you know, selling cars during the offseason. It's no longer the case now, but now it's about heritage and legacy and everything else. And you want to be able to build a championship culture and all this stuff. It's like now for all the complaining that we've heard about Kevin Durant going to Golden State, it's the situation that we as fans created in saying Patrick Ewing was a terrible player because he never won a ring, mm-hmm. or Karl Malone was a terrible player because he never won a ring. You know, so you look at guys like John Wall, who has yet to win a championship and probably won't anytime soon. Russell Westbrook isn't likely to win one in the Western Conference. You know, are they going to go sign with a team at that point it doesn't have good enough players to complement them? I just don't see it.
That doesn't factor in teams like the Celtics, who might have flexibility, or the Spurs, who might have financial flexibility, that have the cap space to bring these guys in. You could pair them along with Boston's mix of players, or Kawhi Leonard in San Antonio. That would be more enticing to one of these players looking to chase a ring than go to Miami, right. just because it's Miami, just because it's Pat Riley or South Beach. We know that these guys want to play with the best players. Not saying J.J. Dion or Tyler Johnson are those elite-level players. Obviously, they're not. But if you have them, you at least start building something, and you could maybe package those guys together. Just like, look, Houston packaged a bunch of players like that together to get James Harden. And James Harden, of course, blew up, and it was better than anybody ever expected. But they at least had the assets to move. You can't just let these assets walk away for nothing. Miami built the trade values. They built the values of Deion Waiters, Tyler Johnson, and James Johnson. You can't just let them go away for nothing. At the very least, you could trade them later. So, yeah. All right, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast, thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions or get information about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. To support the show, make sure you download every episode and follow Locked On Heat on Twitter. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. And go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.